Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Once a week, we interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how to break through the noise and capture the audience's attention. Today's guest is Justin Michelet. Justin is a former speechwriter. He has written for Leon Panetta, Jim Mathis, and General David Petraeus. Currently, he works for Gumroad and writes a newsletter summarizing big ideas of the most interesting people on Twitter.
Yes. Hi, Ari.
So, Justin, thanks so much for joining. Really appreciate it. You know, I came across you from Twitter. You had these great tweet storms that I want to dive into. But before I dive into them, you know, you used to be in the Navy, and I thought this was a really cool first question. You actually worked on, you know, a submarine. Can you talk about just briefly your submarine experience before we dive into the more relevant questions?
It's a rather unique lifestyle to live underwater. The first question I always get is, are there windows? No, there are no windows. It's designed to withstand a torpedo. You know, you can be underwater for years at a time. There's nothing that stops you. You've got a nuclear reactor. You make your own oxygen. You make your own water. It's just an incredible engineering. I think it's the most complicated engineering accomplishment, with the exception of the space shuttle and possibly sophisticated software platforms these days. It's just an incredible thing. I mean, when you're underwater, you're 800 feet down or 500 feet down, the whole submarine shrinks. So you have to design all the systems to accommodate that. So it's just an incredible experience to be underwater like that.
Yeah, so actually I want to segue that into a relevant question for our audience and stuff. So, you know, what were the big learning lessons from that have actually helped you with like your writing career and your, you know, quote unquote creator career? Is there anything that you've taken away from your submarine experience that has helped you, you know, become the prolific writer that you are today?
High degree of patience. That was a very technical, that was the hardest academic thing I've ever done, is to get ready to understand the physics and the chemistry and the electrical engineering and the systems engineering. So there's no direct parallel. However, I always pursued writing while I was on the sub. I mean, I would write these tomes back to my folks and my brothers. By the way, Ari, I'm from Cleveland, or the outskirts of Cleveland. So great to talk with a fellow Ohioan.
Yeah, no, it's great to meet other Ohioans as well.
Yeah, no one seems to stay in Ohio. We all venture away, but it looks like you've come back. It's a good thing.
Well, so I'm actually not originally from here, so it's kind of unusual in that I'm one of the few people who returns or leaves my city and stays in Cleveland when I'm not originally from here. So it's kind of an unusual thing. I'm from New York originally, but Cleveland's been great and stuff, and I think that's actually another good segue into so you left Cleveland and you were in DC. So can you talk about, you know, before you started working with Gumroad, before you were producing these tweet storms, you wrote for government officials. Can you talk about some of the work you did there as a speechwriter? You know, I haven't had anyone on the podcast who has written for others. Most of the people are typically writing content for yourself. What was it like trying to write content for other people that they were reading and, you know, saying, I guess it was literally their own work, even though you were writing it.
Yeah. Happy to talk about that. You know, I think my experience as a speechwriter is in fact sort of the secret sauce of my ability to create these days. I thought I was a very good writer when I began writing for General David Petraeus at U.S. Central Command in around 2009, 2010. Quickly learned how much I had to learn about writing, especially on that level. At the time, you know, he was overseeing both the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, a very high profile figure. Every word out of his mouth had to be precise, and there could be nothing that was misunderstood in his message. And he taught me, he sort of took me under his wing and said, look, I don't think you understand what a theme sentence is, do you? And he was an exceptionally gifted editor. And, you know, I show up on day one, I'm replacing a former Rhodes scholar who was just a terrific speechwriter. She had to go on to her next Army assignment. And he said, look, I need within a week, a 10-page single-spaced speech to an international audience in London. I'm going to be talking about the war and the, you know, U.S. military presence in the Middle East. And we'll be talking to a high-profile think tank, and the message is geared toward our European allies. I had to get in his head and understand where he was coming from very rapidly. So within a week, deliver a speech. He takes me into his office and sits down with me and said, look, the mechanical side of writing has to be nailed. There's an elegant side and there's a mechanical side, but I don't deviate from the principles of Strunk and White. So there can be no grammatical errors in this thing, because it will just annoy me. And, for the simplest thing, like two spaces after a colon, that would really throw him off. So that had to be nailed. And then if the message and the ideas are accurate and precise, on top of that is when you can layer on any elegance to it. But the thing that I had to do very rapidly is read everything he'd ever written, listen to every speech he'd ever given. And that, I think, is the key of what I try to do on Twitter these days, is simply, it's not a writing exercise, it's a listening exercise. And I wrote for Petraeus for about a year and a half, and then he was thrust into the Afghanistan conflict after General McChrystal was fired, and General Mattis then came and was selected and nominated to serve as the commander of U.S. Central Command. So I then had to inhabit the brain of another principal. And then after writing for him for about a year, maybe 15 months, I left the Navy and joined the Obama administration as an appointee at the Pentagon and wrote for Leon Panetta. And so I had to inhabit the brain of a third principal. And that is a very intimate experience. You really, in order to help senior leaders, you have to get in their head almost to the point of assuming responsibility for the outcome of the organization. Otherwise, you're not going to help them. And so you're not looking at it from the perspective of a 28-year-old or a 30-year-old. You're pretending to be the Secretary of Defense. Otherwise, what you offer them is not going to help them think, because ultimately you're not writing for them, you're writing with them. And so just the 4.5-5 year experience of speech writing, I think solidified for me the importance of simply channeling another human being and where they're coming from philosophically. And just to give you a quick sort of segue into how I do these tweet storms, and I call them big idea summaries, because what I try to do is take all of the tweets that someone has written in the free version of the scraping tool, which is about the last 3,000 tweets. And most prolific tweeters will, in essence, repeat themselves in fresh and novel ways. So their worldview is already very solidified by the time they've become prolific. That's what helps them be prolific, because they have a very clear sense of who they are and what their philosophy is. So all I'm trying to do is decode and reverse engineer their own ethos. And that's exactly what I did in speech writing. It started with trying to understand how I should exercise my own voice on Twitter. I had been sort of behind the curtain and writing for others and never really exercised and expressed my own opinions. So I discovered Jack Butcher, who's a very well-known now personality on Twitter. I discovered him almost a year ago and was taken by how clear his voice was. And I said, how the hell did he become so prolific and crystal clear in who he is? And I said, did that just evolve over time? So I exported all of his tweets and, 100 or so pages, if you just export it and copy it into Microsoft Word. And I said, there has to be something here where I can sort of read and channel him and then create a summary of his ideas, and they'll just fall out. And that's exactly what happened. So I did it for Jack. And then I said, wow, that that actually worked. You can literally summarize in about 20 tweets a person's entire set of big ideas. And so I started with Perel and then Kobach and others, and it's been a blast.
So, you know, one of the interesting things that I think is a common theme among people I talk to or people I interview is this imposter syndrome. And, you know, you talked about as a 28-30-year-old, you're writing, you know, not just on behalf of, but literally as, you know, the Secretary of Defense or the, you know, head of the U.S. Army. So how did you fight that imposter syndrome of, you know, having that confidence to be like, I can write at this level and be this expert? And how has that translated to your own work now? You know, has that given you the confidence that when you're tweeting yourself, oh, I'm not worrying about imposter syndrome. I just know my thoughts are good and people will listen.
Yeah, I struggle with that every day. I don't know what it is about my background, but I've always sort of been a bit gun shy. And I think it was because I was in the government and I didn't, you know, people are pretty freewheeling on Twitter with their own opinions. And I always thought, look, I'm representing an institution that's larger than myself. And I did that over and over again, you know, from the Navy to the Pentagon to Palantir. So I was always a little bit careful. But now I have, in the last, say, 9 months or so, I've said, look, life is too short. It's time to start sharing your opinions. And it's been great. You discover the sort of it's this classic lighthouse metaphor. You sort of discover the people who resonate with you when you start to express your own opinions. But I think the thing that I would say is I'll hearken back to this metaphor that Petraeus used when he taught me how to write with him. And that is the parable of the painter. There's this famous American painter 100 years ago who tried to become a master painter. And he went and enlisted the help and tried to become an apprentice for another master painter of the day. And he was just learning and just starting out. And the mentor said, look, go away and paint a painting and bring it to me. And you might be able to see where this is going. The apprentice said, here's my painting, mentor. And the guy said, can you make it any better? And of course, he went away, found some blemishes, touched it up, changed an entire section of the painting, came back, presented the painting. And this happened over and over again for maybe 10 times in a row. And the mentor didn't say a word other than simply ask the question, can you make it any better? By the time he came back on the 10th version, he had almost achieved a masterpiece with no nothing else other than a challenge to work your hardest. And I think what I do these days is simply ask myself, can I make it any better before I publish it? And achieving some quality in your creation, I think, requires just sheer hard work and iteration. And these big idea summaries, I think, are a testament to taking the time to try to get the content to a high degree of quality before I show it to anyone. So I was taught 10 years ago, you don't show the first draft of a speech until it's pretty darn good, or otherwise you're wasting the time of the principal. And so the idea of iteration, you know, as a writer, I really think hard about, you know, getting that first draft to a very, very polished degree. And then, of course, if you've ever written as a member of a team, you suddenly understand, even if you think your draft is really great and you've put in a lot of work on it, somebody with fresh eyes is going to make it 10x better. So that's always been a really wonderful, and that's, I think, another power of Twitter. You get instant feedback, especially as your audience grows. You get instant feedback on what you've done and you can make it even better.
So, you know, one of the things that, you know, I thought was interesting that you, you know, you touched on was you built out these long tweet storms. And I think if, you know, for those that are now new to your work, they would think like, oh, this person came out of nowhere. Like, how did he do this research? How did he develop this? But, you know, you spent years speech writing. And to your point about that masterpiece art creation, I don't think people are realizing how hard this stuff is on the back end, even for like a small tweet storm. You know, you could be spending hours preparing for it. So it's just interesting to give some insight into that. You know, so you've built out these tweet storms, and you know, we talk a lot on the podcast about like the content creation, but one of the cool things that has happened is you're actually, you know, making money now from the content in the form of, you know, you're working with Gumroad. Can you talk about like what Gumroad is for those not familiar, and how, you know, your content creation led to a role in helping that company?
Yeah. I had followed Sahil for a long while on Twitter, and he's opinionated, deeply thoughtful person, a great writer, an exceptionally good writer. And I decided to summarize his thoughts in the same way that I've done these tweet storms, these big idea summaries for others. So I spent a good 20 to 30 hours in his head with all of the content that he had been putting out on Twitter. So I think I had a good understanding of where he was coming from as a person. I published that, and like others, he said, I think, you know, this summarized my thoughts perhaps better than I could have, because it's hard to get that external perspective on yourself sometimes. And I had seen a number of people publish terrific content on Gumroad itself. And I said, look, I really enjoy people and admire people who create quality work. And I sent him a note, and I published it a couple days ago on Twitter, and said, this is the note that I sent Sahil to essentially say, I would like to do X, Y, and Z for you. But what I didn't say in that tweet was I had been messaging him for a couple of months prior to me even sending an email and having the confidence to approach him. He probably a good month and a half before I ever wrote him a formal email, he said, send me precisely what you would want to do and the proof that you can do it. And I thought that was a really interesting challenge for someone who is the prospective decision maker or recruiter or hiring manager. Articulate to me what you think we need at our organization and your proof that you can do it. So I did that in a short note to him. Of course, I had already summarized his work. And I said, I am very good at getting in other people's heads. So I just want to profile their ideas and tell their story. And so I've now done four of these so-called creator spotlights for Gumroad. And now I'm hosting Gumroad Creator Studios, which are terrific. We interviewed, much like this podcast, we interview you well-known, maybe less well-known, or just starting out inexperienced creators, and have them tell their story. So it's, I think, a natural position for me to be in, to sort of draw out from them what they stand for and what they're trying to communicate, the message they're trying to convey to the world. Tomorrow we'll be hosting Jack Butcher for Gumroad at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. So by all means, anyone, please join. Actually, I don't know where you're going to publish the pod. All right.
No, it won't be published yet. So for those listening, you know, sorry you couldn't hear that message, but
it will be on YouTube though.
As we begin to wrap things up, you know, the question I always end on is, you know, one lesson or one thing you do differently. And I think for that question particular, I would love to focus on these, you know, tweet summaries that you did. If you were starting them over, what's like one lesson that you've learned or one thing you do differently that you would tell yourself now that you know what you know?
Yeah, they're really a brute force effort. And it is, I think, possible to leverage tech to make the process more efficient. I would be, and I am starting to do this now, but I would use more tooling under the hood to try to at least get the raw material into a place that's less than 200 pages. So there's a little less to wade through. I'd also start a lot earlier. I would have done this 10 years ago. It's funny how as you start to express your opinions, people give you feedback on what's resonating with them. And you start to circle in, or I would call it spiral in, to your own voice and how you can add value. The way I have started to add value is just do that work on the back end. And I think people respect the amount of effort that it takes. I don't know if they understand really the extent to which these things require hours of meditation. But I think I've gone in the opposite direction. Twitter is very much an ephemeral platform, and I'm trying to create permanent assets from ephemeral material or content. In fact, I think it's possible to create little mini books or mini, like, sort of, here is my philosophy in brief that a person can share with others. And I'm actually talking sort of behind the scenes with a few creators about how we could get them talking about their tweets, so we can present a big idea summary plus sort of extra content underneath the big idea summary about how they come up with their tweets. And so that might be a fun thing for us to explore. But I, you know, starting earlier, leveraging tech.
Thanks so much for joining. For those looking to follow you on social, or for those who, you know, might want to hire you or whatever it is that you're offering, you know, where can they find you? You know, where's the best place to connect with you?
Yeah, Twitter. I'm on Twitter far too often, much like you. Twitter.com/JMichaelAy, JMichaelAy.
Great. Well, Justin, I'll have, for those listening, I'll have the URL in the description. And thanks so much again for joining. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ari. I love what you're doing.